This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Shamita Basu. Today, why hurricanes are more dangerous than ever. In the past month, two major hurricanes hit the southeastern United States.
Helene picked up massive amounts of energy from the unusually warm Gulf waters.
Hurricane Milton has barreled into Florida with historic fury.
Milton is the second major hurricane to hit the region in less than 2 weeks,
making landfall in Siesta Key.
Earlier tonight, Milton spawned tornadoes,
unleashing torrential downpours and catastrophic mudslides.
More than 5 inches of rain in 3 hours.
It is still producing relentless rain and wind.
Landslides and flooding washing away roads and bridges.
Record rain from Helene left some of these towns and cities in absolute ruins.
Milton has passed, but the water continues to rise.
The desperation for food, water, and power in the wake of Hurricane Helene reaching a breaking point.
Many predict scenes of devastation could become the norm as rising temperatures from human-induced climate change take their ever more destructive tolls.
In total, Hurricanes Helene and Milton left at least 245 people dead. More than 90 people in North Carolina are still missing. The two storms are expected to have caused billions of dollars in damage.
This is just the beginning. This is not a one-off thing. This is not a storm of the century.
That's journalist Porter Fox. He's been reporting on climate change for more than a decade, and he's out with a new book, Category 5, Superstorms and the Warming Oceans That Feed Them.
We will see more major hurricanes and more extreme weather with the more heat we trap on this planet and the more heat that gets infused into the oceans.
Porter talked to scientists from NOAA and NASA while reporting for this book, but he also spent a lot of time out on the open sea with sailors and captains, people who have seen firsthand how our storms get bigger and more powerful as our oceans warm. Porter told me once you see it up close for yourself, it's undeniable and alarming how much change we have gone through in such a short time. And unless we take real steps to change the way we impact our planet, big storms will only get worse.
In the last 6 years, we have seen more major hurricanes hit the U.S. than in the last 50.
In the last 6 years, you're saying?
In the last six years. That doesn't even include these last two hurricanes that came through. I mean, you've seen in the last 40 years, we have spent $1.3 trillion and lost 7,000 lives to these hurricanes. Just hurricanes, not extreme weather.
In the U.S.
In the U.S.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And hurricanes have become the most deadly, the most expensive natural disaster in the country. And, you know, they're talking about storms in the future increasing in velocity by 20% or so to this level they're calling an ultra-intense Category 5 storm, which is, I don't know why they're so hesitant to create this Category 6, but it is a Category 6. It's well beyond the threshold of a Category 5 storm. You know, you're going to see a 20% spike in those storms as this century goes forward, and unless we can start to curtail these emissions and draw them down.
For people who maybe don't understand this connection very well, what is the connection between our oceans and these storms?
So we'll start off with our atmosphere, where we obviously have been insulating it and trapping heat. The ocean has absorbed 90% of the heat that humans have created. All of that heat in the ocean is changing how the ocean produces weather. The ocean is the mother of all of our weather. Thunderheads going over your backyard, hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, everything, flooding. And so when you infuse all of that heat into a closed system, it's got to come out somewhere. And it's coming out in these storms. It's coming out in nor'easter winter gales. It's coming out in hurricanes. And that is all a result of this massive amount of energy that we have put into the oceans.
Yeah. And scientists have also linked carbon dioxide with the intensity of these storms. What is that exact connection?
So the carbon dioxide is that insulating blanket. The more you insulate, the hotter the oceans get. The hotter the oceans get, the stronger the storms get. But they have a link directly to the parts per million of CO2 in our atmosphere. You know, that's getting up around, I can't even remember, 450, 440, something like that. You know, if you were to bring that down to 1990s levels, if you can get that down, let's say, to 350 parts per million, you will see within a year the downgrading of these storms. They will not have as much energy. They will not be as strong. It's almost an immediate and direct correlation to the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, which to me, having written about this for so long, you know, all I ever heard about was this massive momentum that climate change had. And it's, even if you stop right now, it doesn't matter. It's going to keep going. In some areas, maybe that is true. In this particularly very devastating arena, that is not the case. Storms follow CO2 counts almost directly.
Help me understand this too, because I feel like when we talk about Category 5 downgrading to 4 or 3, that's only capturing a certain aspect of the intensity of a storm, right? It's only capturing really wind speed, but there's so many other ways in which storms are getting bigger and more dangerous, right?
It's a really good point. You know, the categories go by wind speed, most of the damage, and almost all of the death comes from water. So as the world warms, you're going to see around 8% more water content in the atmosphere for every decade that we keep heating up. And with more water up in the clouds, you're going to get tremendously more rainfall. So the 20 inches they got out of Helene, the 40 inches Hurricane Harvey dumped in Houston in 2 days, you know, this is just unheard of. And it's so much water. But you also have the water coming up from this storm surge. All of these kind of geophysical fallouts from the climate crisis are starting to lump on top of one another and snowball. So you have a storm surge that's riding on elevated sea level on an ocean that is 10 degrees warmer, you know, than it was this time 50 years ago. And then the rainfall on top of that.
Yeah.
And man, it really multiplies the devastation by many times.
I mean, one thing that also that you're making me think about, especially in these recent storms that we saw. I mean, I'm thinking about communities way inland in North Carolina, for example. There are hundreds of miles inland that suffered severe damages, loss of life, all from Hurricane Helene. And it speaks to this idea that there are very few places that we can say for sure are totally immune to the effects of these storms.
Absolutely. And it's going to get worse. The kind of direction hurricanes are taking is that, first of all, they're going to penetrate farther inland, likely up to about 1,000 miles. We're bringing New Mexico, Wisconsin, Illinois, Missouri into hurricane country and everything in between. Obviously, Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee. It's all now within hurricane country. So the storms are also migrating north as northern waters warm. So you're going to see storms in New York, in Boston, in Portland, Maine, Providence, Rhode Island. The biggest problem with this, other than the storms kind of expanding over North America, is that when you get into a region that is not experienced with these storms, they do not know how to prepare. They don't have the defenses. They don't have the levees, the dikes, the early warning systems, the evacuation routes. Florida's seen 100 hurricanes in the last 150 years. You know, the Gulf Coast has seen 36. Through time and experience, they've actually gotten a lot better at managing people and managing these storms. Well, look what happens when it hits North Carolina. You know, nobody evacuated. Nobody really knew what to expect. We didn't really know what to expect as forecasters and even journalists, but it carried that extra moisture deep into the interior of the U.S., and it just completely destroyed those communities.
People from those devastated communities in North Carolina have been sharing their stories, describing what they went through when Hurricane Helene arrived. Stephanie and John Zira spoke to the local station WCNC. They have two young kids, and they were in their home outside of Asheville when the hurricane hit.
I started to call 911. I could not get through. I called again, and I was able to get through. And I said, the water's coming in our house. And they said, get to higher ground. And I was like, okay, we're going in the attic. And they're like, we're overwhelmed with calls right now. That's all we can tell you to do.
The family ultimately climbed through their attic and onto their roof. They screamed for help. And after several hours, they were rescued by neighbors in kayaks.
Just in complete shock that this is our situation all of a sudden. And being feeling completely unprepared, like, how could we have prevented this? And I didn't realize, and had a lot of guilt about that until we realized the devastation of it all. Because knowing now, there was no way we could have gotten out.
Another woman, Megan Dry, told her story to the digital TV network Merritt Street Media about how she lost her parents and 7-year-old son. She and her family had also climbed onto their roof in search of safety.
I got my son to the highest point of the house that I could. But once the house detached, we ran into power lines and we ran into trees, which knocked us off into the water. That's when I went under and I lost sight of my mom and my son. I could hear them screaming. My dad was trying to fight for his life on the water. He is, 73 years old, as my mother was. My son was 7. He didn't know how to swim. So my dad had grabbed onto a branch or something and was holding on. But the last thing that I heard from my son was he was screaming for Jesus. And he was saying, "Jesus, please save me." That's the last words I heard out of my son's mouth. And that was when we separated. We all got knocked into the water into different ways. I didn't see them again.
Megan was rescued, but her son and parents didn't survive. In Irwin, Tennessee, Robert Jarvis reported to work at a plastic manufacturing plant on the morning the floods began. He told News 5 WCYB that he and his coworkers were not warned to leave in time to escape the floods.
I lost my car and started floating down the river. Well, we didn't know what to do. We were in panic mode. So the water was coming up, and then we did what we had to survive. It was a guy in a 4x4 came, picked a bunch of us up and saved our lives, or we'd have been dead too.
Two employees are confirmed dead and 4 are missing.
It breaks my heart for them people that we lost. They were good. Every one of them were good people. I work with them every day. We were like family. We cut up, we joked there. And it broke my heart to see that they died and that they didn't make it. All because of greed, I think.
The family of one of the victims has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the company Impact Plastics for not warning employees to evacuate in time, despite being aware of the risks. Impact Plastics has said that the company dismissed workers at an appropriate time and didn't stop anyone from leaving the plant. Even after the storm had passed, roads, power, internet, and cell service were wiped out. In some areas, for several days, survivors were isolated, unable to communicate and not knowing when help might arrive. Elise Adams spoke to NBC News about an elder family member who was stuck in the mountains in western North Carolina. She said the debris was so thick that rescuers couldn't reach them.
She is stuck up there. It's her and a few of her friends. They are elderly. They are also senior veterans. They need supplies. They were barely able to get some gas up there. And the only way out is to be airlifted. Her home is gone. Her cars are gone. Her cats are gone. This has been absolutely devastating. They have nothing.
Was she one of those cases that it was too hard for her to evacuate, or she had no understanding that she had to evacuate?
I don't think that these people thought that it was going to be this extreme.
Then, just a week later, Hurricane Milton hit Florida. And while it wasn't as devastating as Helene, at least 20 people died. And we're hearing harrowing stories from survivors there, too. Communities across the South have been reeling in the aftermath of these storms, accounting for all of the lives lost, the damage done, the towns forever changed. But on top of complicated recovery efforts, there's also been a lot of misinformation about FEMA and other government agencies providing aid. Republican politicians with big platforms, like former President Donald Trump and Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, have pushed debunked conspiracy theories about the storm. In fact, some local Republicans have issued statements calling out those lies and saying they're distracting from the important work of getting aid to people who need it. I asked Porter, what do we do now that we're up against not only human-made climate change, but also politicized misinformation?
It's just incredibly irresponsible. It's the last thing that these victims need is to be told untruths about the federal response, about house insurance, about storm activity, about fatalities, about all of that. It is adverse to everything we're trying to do for those people. I would say the biggest lie being told right now is politicians, even some weather forecasters, saying that this was a once-in-a-century storm. This was a once-in-10,000-year flood. Well, they just keep saying that. And then it happens 2 years later. So the reality is that we are at the doorstep of this age in which we have superheated everything. We're at the doorstep of this age of superstorms. And people deserve to know that things are going to get worse before they get better until we can constrain the CO2 we're putting up in the air and possibly draw it down. And so what I would say to those politicians who are spreading lies and misinformation, if you're not going to fund FEMA, if you are not going to bring Congress back into session to pass emergency funding like Mike Johnson did, if you're not going to believe in climate change, then you better be on the ground with those constituents that are getting run over by these massive storms. And you better be there with checks in hand to help them out because it is their own constituents that they are putting underwater and putting under these storms. That is the lie that concerns me and that I think Americans deserve to know. It doesn't have to be like this. You bring down the temperature by 1 degree, you watch these storms shrink back to what they were doing 20 years ago. You pull down X amount of gigatons of CO2 out of the atmosphere and sequester it, we can watch these storms shrink. But we have politicians running for office this election season. They want to drill more oil, sell more oil, and completely wipe out the EPA and any climate change advances we have made. You do that, these storms accumulate so much energy, they spin out of control. Mm. So that's just a direct relationship.
Yeah. I think for the average person listening and reading the news and seeing these storms, they just want an understanding of what is the right way out? How do we climb out? What are the policies to be supporting? When they hear their elected officials talk about what needs to be done, I think, like you said, we're pretty short-sighted. There's a lot of aftermath and immediate cleanup, which is important. But what kinds of long-term solutions should people be aware of that are worth thinking about and worth supporting?
I would say on an individual level and on a macro level through your vote, we should be doing everything we can to keep greenhouse gases from being emitted, to keep fossil fuels from being burned. We need to be asking our local utilities, how is this energy created? Where is this coming from? Easy to find for people. And if they are burning natural gas, if the few coal power plants are still out there, you know, we need to use our voice to try to shut them down. The biggest move we can make, the biggest lever that we have to pull is our vote. And if we can get politicians in power from either party, I'm not here to promote one or the other, anyone who understands this science, supports it, and will support this fairly clear path forward, that's who needs to be in power right now.
Porter, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
You can read Category 5, Superstorms and the Warming Oceans That Feed Them by Porter Fox on Apple Books. We'll include a link for you on our show notes page.